We're looking at James chapter 5 today, verses 7 through 20. And James kind of finishes his lesson, his whole letter here, with kind of a flourish, okay? A whole lot of things that he sort of starts piling on very quickly here. Think about, one of the things that James has, can I say, harped on, and I think that's fair to use that word, is our use of our tongues, our speech. And although I don't want to categorize all of these things merely as ways of using our speech, because they're a little deeper than that, they kind of are. All the things he says are things about the way we can use our tongues for good. But what I want you to see here is that there are some underlying matters of the heart that are the things that drive our speech here. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 34, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So not only are we going to be looking at what James says about using our speech, but there's kind of underlying things that drive that, all right? And I think that's a lot of what he does here. So what is the condition of the heart that prompts us to use our tongue in the things that he says? And what is the overflow out of which we speak appropriately? You know, we fill our minds up. We fill our hearts up. I don't know if this was some sort of computer statement that was made, but sort of garbage in, garbage out. You know, you put garbage in, that's what you're going to get out is garbage. So we're going to put the right stuff in there. The first thing he says to us, we see, or at least the first thing he says about using our tongues is verse 9 of this section. And he says, don't grumble against one another. And I think it's fairly well known to most of us who are familiar with the Old Testament stories how much grumbling went on in the desert. You know, as soon as they got out of the and got freedom that they desperately wanted, the first thing they did and did repeatedly was to grumble. In fact, in Numbers chapter 11 and verse 4, Moses mentions that the rabble among them had a strong craving. And that seemed to be what drove their grumbling constantly, grumbling against God, grumbling against one another. And I kind of tend to think that that particular statement that Moses makes is not all that different from what James has said earlier in James chapter 4 and verse 1, where he says, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? I don't know if it's an exact parallel, but you know, strong cravings seems to me to be very similar to your passions are at war with you. And so, you know, he's not really saying anything different than what we perhaps already know is the way, you know, we're supposed to live. I kind of wonder here, you know, what James says here, what does the grumbling against one another sound like? You know, what was it he was addressing? I mean, we don't know the details here about, you know, what were they mad at each other about? Or what made them kind of fight with each other? Sounds like their grumbling was, you know, I don't like the way someone's... I mean, it could be something as simple as, I didn't like the way they looked. I mean, you know, that's silly, but, you know, we get kind of silly about things like that, don't we? We grumble against one another. They did this, they did that, they said this, they said that. I don't know what it looked like. I don't know what it sounded like. But I think the issue at heart here is the context in which he tells us this. And in verse 7, the first thing he says is, be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. So I kind of wonder if maybe grumbling isn't a matter of impatience in the heart. That we get impatient with other people. We get impatient with God, you know. And the writer here, James, just tells us, now guys, just remember what the prophets went through, and remember what Job went through in terms of patience. Will that solve our problem of grumbling? Well, it just very well might if we learn a little more patience with one another. I have to believe that if you read through some of the prophetic writings, they were pretty upset with their brethren. They were pretty upset with other Israelites, okay? And they had to deal with an awful lot of stuff. You don't think that's true? Go back and read through Jeremiah sometime. There were at least a couple of times when Jeremiah was criticized so much by his countrymen that he said, Lord, You know, just stop listening to their prayers. I don't want you to forgive them anymore. And he was really mad. And so that doesn't sound like he's being very patient, but he kind of had enough, okay? The fact is, in the long run, he had to kind of come to grips with that, which is kind of what we all have to do, isn't it? We have to come to grips with being patient with each other, being patient with the way God is at work. He also says, remember Job. Job's struggle was directly with God. God, why are you allowing all this stuff to happen to me? Job doesn't get a great answer. Basically says, you know, Job, why don't you let me run the universe and you take care of your life? Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's reducing it a little bit more than perhaps it should be. But he kind of says that to him. Job, you really don't know what you're talking about. And so Job has to remember patience. And apparently his patience paid off. At least that's what James tells us. So he says a couple of other things here that I think might help. Number one is, first, establish your hearts. Develop a firm commitment to be faithful. That's the first thing we do. Once we get that, maybe patience follows along in its wake a little bit. Second, he says, remember the judges standing at the door. In Matthew chapter 12, verses 36 through 37, the same context where Jesus says, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks, he reminds everybody that, you know, careless words are going to come under the judgment of God. So, you know, that may be a little bit on the negative side, but it's not the worst motivation in the world to realize, you know, we're going to be judged by what we say. So you probably ought to be a little careful about what you say against other people, about what you say against God, however it is. Therefore, we come back to, don't grumble. Don't get involved with doing that. Fill your heart up with establishment of your hearts. Be patient. And remember, the judge is standing at the door. The second thing he says here about the tongue, I think, is very interesting, because he begins it with by saying, above all, brothers. And that is, don't swear. Again, I don't know what the oaths would have sounded like, what they would have had to do in the first century. But an oath somehow is supposed to affirm one's truthfulness. And I think what James is calling into question here is, do you really need that to affirm your truthfulness? I've had people say to me, oh, I swear to God I wasn't doing such and such, when I knew doggone well they were. You know? They're swearing because they're trying to make themselves sound like they're really being truthful. And so, do we really need that? You know, it really calls into question why we need that oath in the first place. You know, what's wrong with operating at our word? We give our word for things. Why shouldn't that be good enough? When we say we're going to do something, that's really what we ought to do. Maybe we shouldn't open our mouths, you know, and say we're going to do a certain thing if we're not really going to do it. Why do we need lawyers to enforce everything? I don't know that I can get into the whole legal ramifications of all that and the whole contract thing and how that works, and we're probably never going to get away from that. But among Christians, and I'm not saying we shouldn't draw up contracts, we probably will need to if we're working within the world, but shouldn't our yes be yes and our no be no? Isn't that the way we should operate? And maybe that's one of the things that Steve was talking about this morning. What makes us sufficient and adequate is that we try to live that way. Maybe that really makes a difference in the lives of people when they see that we can just let our yes be yes and our no be no. We don't have to swear. Can we be trusted with what we say? I think the issue of the overflow here is integrity. The integrity of our hearts, the integrity of our word. If we say something, that's the way it should be. And even if we say something, we're going to make a commitment to something, and later on we go, wow, that's kind of hard. I don't know that I want to continue with that. We should stick with it because we said so. That's what we do. Mean yes when you say yes. Mean no when you say no. And if that's not sufficient, go back and see what Jesus says about it in Matthew chapter 5. He's big on the same thing. He says pretty much the same thing. So don't swear. It's interesting to me that, you know, James seems to want to emphasize this. Above all, my brothers, let your yes be yes and your no be no. He goes on, however, and there are a number of other things. I'll try to get through these. There's a lot of information here. You know, like I said, he kind of ends with a flourish of things. And so the next series of things, he talks about praise and prayer. All ways of using your speech, aren't they? He says, praise when you're cheerful. Pray when you're suffering. And he notes that, call the leaders to pray for you. And their prayer will heal you. By the way, it's not the oil that heals, it's the prayer here. Whatever use the oil played, I don't know that I want to get into that today. But the fact is, he talks about, and he kind of connects here, the person's sins being healed, or his sins will be forgiven if necessary. So somewhere along the line, he seems to connect prayer and healing of the spirit and healing of the soul as well. But prayer should be the natural response, because we know that God's the one that's in control. We talked again in a class this morning. Steve was talking about how Paul says, well, who's sufficient for all this? Well, none of us are, humanly speaking, are sufficient. We're not sufficient in ourselves even to be here and to praise God. What makes us sufficient is what God has done. And so when we realize that, we realize we have a need for a higher power. Well, when you're suffering for something, why not go to that higher power? See, it's out of that overflow that drives us to our knees. And maybe we should get in the habit of being on our knees even before those times happen. But when they do, we're sort of prepared to pray some more, because God's the one who is going to take care of that. We recognize that the truth about the condition of the world. See, we recognize that we're sinners. And we recognize that only the truth will set us free. It's kind of a doctrinal overflow. We have to believe that truth. But once we get it, why is it not natural for us to praise and to pray? He continues. He says, confess to and pray for one another. Again, an awareness of personal sin, I believe, is what is the overflow of the heart here. And, you know, I know we tend to be a little concerned about how much guilt we dump on ourselves, and I'm not trying to lay it on so thick that, you know, we can't bear the weight of our personal sin. But I'm just simply trying to point out, we don't have to bear the weight of our personal sin, no matter what it is. God is always there, ready to heal and forgive. Confession helps, as do the prayers offered by one another. Now, it doesn't mention the leaders here. Pray for one another. Go back and read through some of the letters of the Apostle Paul, and how many times he begins the letter, you know, I've just been praying for you guys. I'm thankful for you guys. I lift you up to the Father. That's not exactly the same language he used, but he does do that regularly. He prays for his churches. Now, as James goes on to describe it here, the healing is both spiritual and physical, though not always necessarily a direct link. I don't want you to think I'm saying here that because you're sick, you've done something wrong. Not necessarily, but it could be. There sometimes seems to be a link. Jesus tells the man at the pool, you know that situation in the Gospel of John where there's a guy waiting by the pool, and supposedly when the water stirs, he can get down into the water and be healed, but he can't seem to get down quick enough because somebody gets there ahead of him. Jesus says to him, stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. So he at least seems to tell us there's some connection. The physical and the spiritual are connected in some way. The power of prayer, however, is simply one of the main points that James wants us to remember. Okay, are you sick? Pray. Are you suffering? Pray. You know, those moments perhaps are times that make us aware of our spiritual need. So maybe those things kind of, at least, if nothing else, they sort of drive us back to God, because they tell us something about what's going on. But he's trying to emphasize here the power of prayer when he tells us about Elijah. And probably if there's nothing else we get out of what I'm saying today, remember the power of prayer. Remember Elijah. Remember that James says he was just a human. You're a human. Prayer can be so effective. Prayer is powerful. It's one of the things all of us can do. And it's one of the things that kind of reduces all of us to the same level. Because God doesn't listen to a certain person's prayer any more than he listens to anybody else's prayer. He says the prayer of a righteous man is effective. He didn't listen to Elijah because Elijah was somehow better than us. Although it's kind of hard for me not to think he was, you know, because he was Elijah. He was a powerful man, but he was a righteous man. He was doing the will of God. And so, you know, does the abundance of faith in our hearts give us that same kind of confidence in prayer? Do we believe that our prayers are effective? I want you to. I want us all today to be able to realize that our prayers are effective. We don't always see them happen. We don't always see the results immediately. But we have to believe that God wants us to pray and that our prayers are effective. James is hammering that point home here about prayer. And we should recognize that it is one of the best uses of our speech, of our tongues. And then he finally tells us back in at the very end of this, it's almost tacked on. To me, it's kind of a very abrupt ending of the letter. Because he simply says, bring back a wanderer. All right? And there's certainly, I think, an assumption here that is an activity that involves love, not judgment. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 8 tells us love covers a multitude of sins. Just like bringing back a sinner covers a multitude of sins. I kind of wonder if they aren't connected. You know, that the reason we try to bring people back to Christ is not because we want to pass judgment. It's because we love them. And that's got to be our motivation. Anything else just probably isn't going to quite do what we expect it to do. Again, I refer to our class on Sunday morning in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 4. Paul talks about he wrote them a painful letter. You know, he apparently had to say a few things to them they didn't want to hear. But he says, you know what? The reason I wrote that letter is because I love you. And I know, you know, when you have to correct somebody or chastise them or confront them, it doesn't sound very loving. It doesn't feel very loving. But somehow we have to be able to do it that way. We have to find that motivation that it's because we really care about people. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1, Paul tells the Galatians that a gentle spirit is the thing that will probably bring that about the best. Listen to what he says. Brothers, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Somewhere along the line, we seem to have gotten the notion that the harder we say it, the louder we say it, with, you know, more anger in our voice, that's the thing that's going to get people to listen. Not necessarily. Paul says you have to do it in a spirit of gentleness. In fact, listen to a couple of statements from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs has so much to say about our speech. And I think there are some things in the book of Proverbs that relate directly to what the James is telling us right here. First of all, Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 4. You don't have to turn there. Just listen to them for a moment. A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Now, he said something very similar to that back in chapter 15 and verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. How about Proverbs 16, 23 and 24? The heart of the wise makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. And then chapter 25 and verse 25. And that's not the right reference. I'm sorry, I do not have the right reference. But he makes a statement in the book of Proverbs somewhere. Okay, sorry about that. a ruler can be persuaded by a gentle tongue. And a gentle tongue can break a bone, is the statement that he makes. Think about that. You know, to break something, you got to use a lot of force. But a gentle tongue, is that what has the force of persuasiveness? That's what he seems to be saying. And so it's our love for the lost that really prompts us to do this. It's not that we're angry at them. We love them. We care about people. And it's, I believe he's talking about, back in James, those who have fallen away or those who have never known the way of Christ. Save them from death. Cover a multitude of sins. And so we conclude with simply reminding ourselves there are several things that the Apostle James tells us here. Negatively, stop grumbling and don't swear. No need for either of those two. Patience and integrity in your heart will ensure that you don't do these things. Positively, praise God. Pray. Turn back wanderers from the path of evil. And let me emphasize, for a good reason, I think, really the one about prayer. Pray, pray, and pray some more. Beginning in October the 17th, we will engage in our yearly 40 days of prayer. And our theme this year is actually based on what James says here, that the prayer of a righteous man is effective. And so, you know, will the power of prayer in your life be effective? Will you engage in the power of prayer? Will you be one of those who pray? It's just a challenge for you. And as always, we're simply trying to help you develop a habit of doing what the writers of the New Testament tell us over and over again. You have to pray. You have to engage God. And prayer is one of the ways that we do that. So my encouragement today is simply to think about all of the ways here that you can use your tongue both positively and negatively, and make sure that your tongue becomes a tree of life to other people. Shall we stand and sing our song of encouragement?